An insider's look at the National Football League. It's NFL Lunch.
Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
With Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Time to feed you some football. It's NFL Lunch on Vinny and Haney. Cordell Woodland filling in for Bob Haney here with Vinny Serrato. Quick draw McGraw behind the glass. Ravens, they're getting ready for their home opener Sunday at 1 p.m. taking on the Las Vegas Raiders. Almost said the Oakland Raiders right there. Still getting used to that. Joining us now from the CBS broadcast, he'll be doing the play-by-play with Tiki Barber doing the color commentary as well. We've got Andrew Catalan. Andrew, what's going on?
Don't start getting Oakland in my head for Sunday now. It took me a while to get used to Las Vegas.
Yes, it's still taking some getting used to for me, obviously, right now. And look, these are two teams that are right now trying to get their first win of the season, both coming off of losses in week one. I think, obviously, each game went differently. How do you see this game going on Sunday?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of positives to take away if you're a Ravens fan. I thought they played really well. I thought they easily could have won that game. Week one on the road against the defending champs, obviously a disappointment because you were so close to getting the win, but I think that there's a real bright future ahead. So I think the Ravens come home with some momentum, home opener energy. They're going to go out there and play a good game. You look at the Raiders and you look at the score of their first game. They lost 22-10. You know, watching the film, they didn't look as bad as the score might indicate. Their offense never really got going. They didn't go for it on a fourth down in the fourth quarter. I think that was a mistake. They ended up punting, and the Chargers went down and scored. But they still have a really good defense. They still have some really good pieces on offense. You know, I think that the Ravens are a deserved favorite, but I wouldn't put too much stock into that week one performance by the Raiders. I think that there were some bright spots for them as well.
Yeah, Andrew, I was telling Cordell a little bit earlier, you know, Harbs and his staff were on the phone with his brother, you know, right after that game Sunday night to get the intel on what they thought of the Raiders. But I agree with you. I think, you know, if you just look at the score and look at the stats and you say, oh, they gave up 176 yards rushing, but 107 was on two plays. Otherwise, they had 25 carries for 69 yards. I think their defensive front has a huge advantage over the Ravens this week.
You know, look, I know a lot's been made of that Ravens offensive line. I think it's going to take some time for them to gel. I didn't think it was that poor of a performance in week one on the road. That's a tough environment. I think there were some positives to build on. But I think you could say that about the Raiders' defensive line going against a lot of offensive lines in the NFL, especially now with Christian Wilkins. I mean, Crosby is in a category of his own. I mean, when I meet with these teams and you mention his name, I've never heard people talk so glowingly about a single player than I hear about Max Crosby. So he's an animal and a beast on his own, but I've always been a big fan of Christian Wilkins. I think that's a dynamic 1-2 punch for them up front. It will be a lot to handle, but you know, I do feel that Ravens offensive line with another week under their belt, with Lamar now displaying that element of maybe running more than we've seen the last couple of years, I think that can maybe neutralize it a little bit. But no doubt, a big challenge for the Ravens offensive line on Sunday.
We're talking to Andrew Catalan from CBS. He'll be doing the play-by-play. He and Tiki Barber will be in the booth Sunday. A.J. Ross on the sideline for Raiders and Ravens. Andrew, looking at this game and we saw Lamar Jackson have 16 carries on Thursday night. A lot's been made of that since that game. Do you anticipate this, especially with that Raiders pass rush that they have? Could we see Lamar running just as much this week? And as the play-by-play guy that's calling this game, are you hoping to call some Lamar Jackson big runs?
You know, I had his the Ravens week one game in Miami about 5 years ago when he threw for about 800 yards and 5 touchdowns or whatever the case may be. That was a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun as a play-by-play guy to be doing Lamar Jackson games, I'll tell you that. You know, to answer your question, though, you know, I think that's going to be something that's going to be week to week. Yeah, that's the way I feel. I mean, I know what John Harbaugh said about we didn't bring in Derrick Henry to get 30 carries. I also feel like maybe he's going to get more than 13. I really think it's going to be dependent upon the game. And, you know, look, I know you guys have talked a lot about Lamar losing weight. He's faster. He's more explosive. Yeah, that's always going to be a part of his game and this offense. But also, you want to make sure that he's healthy there late in the season going into the playoffs. So, again, I think it's game by game, and I think a lot is dictated on how the Raiders want to approach the rush. I mean, Kansas City seemed to me was kind of running by Lamar. You know, Antonio Pierce has already talked about a cage rush where you don't run past him and try to, you know, limit some of his damage that way. So I think we'll find out. I think Todd Monken has a lot of options, though, with the pieces he has on offense.
And, Andrew, watching that Charger game last week, you know, on the All-22, I mean, it looked like the Raiders got off the bus blitzing, you know, and especially in the red zone and on third down. I mean, the Chargers were 0-7 on third down, but then you got to throw in that Lamar factor. Can you afford to do that? Because if he breaks through the blitz, it'll be like Dobbins on those 61 and 46 yards runs because there'll be nobody back there.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's a great point. And, you know, you see what the Raiders defense did to Justin Herbert. He was really limited. And you pointed out there was a couple of big plays that really hurt the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders got hurt, in my opinion, by the turnovers and then by the decision to not go for it on fourth down on the Chargers 43 with 7:30 to go. So, again, as we talked about, it wasn't like this was a really poor Vegas game. I mean, there was a few things that didn't go their way. You know, Antonio Pierce has a lot of people around him. Obviously, he played at a high level in the NFL. He's got Marvin Lewis as his assistant head coach. He's got Rob Ryan. He's got Mike Caldwell. I mean, their coaching staff had incredible playing careers in the NFL. So there's no shortage of expertise on that staff and how they're going to want to attack Lamar and the Ravens. I think it'll just come down to execution.
A lot of former Ravens coaches on AP staff.
And no doubt, Marvin Lewis, notably, as you guys know, was there for 6 years and then 16 years with the Bengals.
Andrew, last thing for you, Davante Adams, he's still the guy on that Raiders offense for sure, and it's been a struggle for him to stay happy, it seems like, in Vegas since he's been a part of that team, especially since they've moved on from Derek Carr. A lot was said this offseason. Didn't have a monster game in week one. Do you feel like the Raiders will be able to do enough to keep Davante Adams happy this year?
I do. I mean, I think some of what we see is a little overblown. I don't buy into everything that, you know, you hear. I mean, a lot of those headlines about Adams were in the offseason where things were a little quieter and everyone's talking about Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. So, you know, I think that for the most part of the times that I've met with Davante Adams, he's been a true pro, a great teammate. So I think so. I think the interesting part about this Raiders offense is when they were using three tight ends last week, and most notably Brock Bowers, the 13th overall pick in the draft out of Georgia. I mean, it seems like he's going to be a big part of their offense. So you can't just focus on Adams and Myers. You're going to have the tight ends that are a big part of this game plan offensively.
Andrew, great stuff. Really appreciate your time today. Look forward to hearing you on the call Sunday. Remember, Andrew Catalan, he and Tiki Barber in the booth for CBS. AJ Ross on the sideline as well. Andrew, have a great call Sunday. We'll talk again down the line.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, guys. Yep. Thank you.
Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll get back to the Orioles. Orioles with the day off today. They dropped the game last night, getting walked off out in Fenway. We'll reset the Orioles and look back on their series next here on The Fan. But we're looking back at the Orioles' loss to the Red Sox last night. They get walked off in extra innings, 5-3, three-run shot to end the game by Tyler O'Neill off of Keegan Aiken. And it was a lot of the same issues that have plagued this team over the last few months, mainly with the offense, hitting with runners in scoring position. You go to the other side, it's the errors. You know, you got two pivotal errors in that game last night. One of them ended up resulting in a run immediately. The other one led to the three-run shot that ended the game. So you got a good night from Dean Kramer. Outside of Aiken giving up the walk-off, the bullpen, for the most part, was okay. Perez, I thought, stumbled a little bit. But overall, no harm, no foul. It just feels like the Orioles continue to lose games the same way.
Let me ask both of you guys this. Now, last year, they were best team in baseball, runners in scoring position, one of the best defenses, you know, last year. And who's different? What's different? They're these younger, they're a year older.
Well, they don't have some of the guys that they've had.
Such as?
Ramon isn't there right now. But even last year, you had...
He wasn't all-star.
No, he wasn't an all-star. But just in terms of the defense, defensively, they were a better defensive team last year. You had
Hayes
out there. You had, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank, who's hurt right now at second base.
Mateo.
You had Mateo out there. You had more speed. Mountcastle wasn't dealing with the injuries that he's dealing with right now.
And he's real good defensively.
Overall, they were a healthy team last year. I think that's the biggest difference from this team to last year. They just did not get bitten with the injury bug the way that they are right now.
Well, I think there really is no explanation
right,
for Vinny's question, because for the most part, it is the same personnel, at least all of your top guys.
Right.
It's the same hitting coaches for the past three or four years, really. So all the people that, you know, keep calling for them to be fired, I mean, where's the praise for what they did for the team last year? I mean, it goes both ways. And in some cases, I mean, how about an Anthony Santander? He's having a career year. You know, Gunnar Henderson earlier this year, MVP candidate, still overall pretty good. So some guys are having career years, but overall those results just aren't there. There's no one thing you can point your finger to. It's puzzling.
Well, I would also say, especially when you talk about the one-run games, Felix Bautista not being there is a huge change.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that one.
You go from having the best closer in baseball to pretty much they've been scrambling on the back end of the bullpen for 75% of the season to this point right now. I mean, it seems like they've kind of found a home here with Dominguez for now, but... I don't think it's a situation where they're going to stick with him regardless of what he's doing out there. If he starts blowing saves, we're going to be right back shuffling him out again. And we could see Kimbrel back in there getting another shot. But I do think when you look at Bautista not being there, Bradish and those guys not being there, I think the injuries is the biggest thing that I look at in terms of why there's a different team this year compared to last year.
I think, too, Norb, it is a totally different. Last year, everything was going right for them. It was smooth. They were happy, cocky, confident. They didn't have the ups, Evan. They never lost a series, right?
Well, they weren't swept.
They never got swept.
Yeah. Right.
Right. You know, and they had winning streaks. They didn't have these lengthy losing streaks. Now they've got a – they didn't have – the only adversity they had was when they lost in the playoffs, but that was the end of the season, really.
Right, and by that point, it was too late.
Right.
I mean, they got punched in the face. They couldn't respond. This year, it's much different, but again, we keep talking about it. The personnel's the same. And in some cases, you've gained extra players. I mean, you know, full season for Colton Cowser, Jackson Holliday's
might be the rookie of the year.
Right. So, again, I really, the more I think about it, have no explanation for it. What Cordell was talking about with the bullpen, at least that makes sense from a personnel standpoint that, yeah, you don't have the best closer in baseball. Starting rotation, you've got a whole five-man rotation on the IL right now. I can point my finger to that and say that's a reason for the team not being as good. But as far as the lineup, I'm left scratching my head on a nightly basis.
I think a lot of it, too, and look, when you talk about them last year putting together long winning streaks, that was the norm. This year, I mean, the last time that they've had a winning streak longer than two games, you'd have to go back to June 26th to the 30th, where they had a four-game winning streak. That's a long time ago. And I think, especially when you talk about this lineup right now, the team as a whole, I think last year they were playing with house money. They really were. They go and win the division. A lot of people were still saying they're ahead of schedule last year winning the division.
Right.
They played kind of stress-free.
Expectations.
Big expectations coming into this year, and I think you're starting to see some of these young guys especially buy into some of that stuff, and they're just pressing. I think a lot of it is they're pressing. They're trying to meet expectations. They're trying to appease what everybody thinks they should be doing and what they should look like. They want to keep up with the home run numbers that they had started early in the year,
which they didn't have last year.
They didn't have a lot of that stuff.
They were drawing in, they were hitting RBIs, getting people in, runners in scoring position.
Playing stress-free baseball last year.
Yep. And now... Yeah, they are. It is a different deal. I mean, they're in a playoff they're in a fight.
Mm-hmm. I mean, last year they once they took the AL East from the Rays in the midpoint of the season, they never looked back. Now it's been a tug of war fight with the Yankees for months now. I think that's all that stuff is stressful for what we continue to forget at times, that this is still a young team. I'm not making excuses for them at all. I'm just saying that this is still a young team that I think is still learning on the fly. They're now learning actively right now how to manage expectations, how to get out of the rut that they're in and get back to playing consistent baseball. They're struggling with that, and it takes time. You look at some of these other, the Phillies had a moment where they were struggling this year. Look at them, right back on track. The Astros, right back on track. Even the Yankees, as up and down as it's been for them, they've been a little more stable, it feels like, than the Orioles have recently. I think some of the youthness is playing a factor.
I think what you're meant, those teams that you just mentioned, their stars are veteran leadership stars.
Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll bring in Mike Harmon, talk some sports with him, look ahead to tonight's football game on Thursday Night Football, all that and more next here on The Fan. Let's bring in Mike Harmon from Fox Sports Radio, talk some sports with him. What's going on, Mike?
What's going on, gentlemen? Happy week two. It begins again. How quickly the calendar changes.
It's crazy. It's crazy. As long as we wait for it, we're already here in week two. Mike, I'm going to start off with a fantasy question because it is that time of year. And Christian McCaffrey has got a lot of fantasy owners worried right now with his situation. And people are actively trying to trade McCaffrey, but at the same time, they don't know what his trade value should be right now. How would you go about you utilizing Christian McCaffrey, whether it's keeping him, trading him, whatever, if he was on your team?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking to trade him, just be prepared to be underwhelmed with the offers, right? We've got a lot of unknowns in a week to week. His coach is talking about being careful. He's saying he wants to go on Sunday. Somewhere in between is the truth. I mean, Jordan Mason acquitted himself pretty nicely against what's supposed to be a really good Jets defense. So I don't know that there's a hurry to get him back. I mean, you're playing for January. You're playing for February running around the French Quarter. You're not playing for week two, week three, week four in September. So for fantasy owners, I'd say calm the hell down, and I hope you drafted a backup somewhere there on your fantasy. But if you didn't, shame on you, and you take the pittance that you get.
Hey, Mike, what did you think of your Bears? I mean, that was a good win for them with a poor offense, but, I mean, they made some plays, got excited, and now what do you think about Houston this week, which is going to be a real test on the road?
No, certainly a daunting test. I don't think C.J. Stroud's going to make the same inane decisions that Will Levis did this week. But, I mean, a lot to take from it. You know, special teams, Velus Jones gave up basically gave them a score, right, by letting the ball bounce off him on a kickoff. So you got that going for you. Assume that goes away. On the other side, you know, you've got another returner who had a couple opportunities and made some plays. Your defense, you expected to be top 10, so they should be up to the task. And frankly, the Bears' offensive game plan was puzzling at times. Caleb had his welcome to the NFL. Hey, this is a lot faster than college moment with the 20-yard sack. I dare say he'll be better about not doing that again. Needs to learn a little bit about touch. I would think Keenan Allen doesn't drop a sure touchdown again as he did in week one, because that looks a lot better if he scores that touchdown, right? Game changes, yep. Complexion changes. You get maybe get to exhale. The stadium gets to exhale, all of those things. So, work in progress. Hopefully Adunze isn't too banged up with the knee and should be back on the field here in short order. But the other is they abandoned the run game. And I know DeAndre Swift likes to dance and juke and whatever, and he was pathetic. They got two other running backs, and that's the thing. I would have held up signs to Waldron going, you have Johnson and Herbert. They like to run forward and don't dance as much. So get what you can get and move forward. So, you know, take the victory. Still a long way to go to get to your 8.5 if you bet it.
We're talking to Mike Harmon from Fox Sports Radio as Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan. And Mike, Cincinnati looked horrible on Sunday, got bullied by the New England Patriots. And that's the way I remember the Patriots playing for years. I didn't expect to see that on Sunday, ran the ball down their throat. Defense pretty much locked up Jamar Chase and company. Jamar Chase looked like he didn't even want to be on the field on Sunday. Are you concerned at all about the Bengals?
100%. Right? I mean, look, I'm glad for the Patriots, and after an off season of all the vitriolic ink that was slung out there, they're still going to play defense. And Ramondre Stevenson is a hell of a running back. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and even through all the fantasy talk coming into the year, it was, wow, I really like that guy. I wish he had some help kind of thing. And you know, they went and punched him in the mouth. And that's one thing that's become consistent from Zach Taylor. What is he, 1-10 now in the first 2 weeks of a season, or 1-11 or something? 1-10, I guess, so he'd be an odd number. But either way, they don't come prepared. But the T. Higgins thing isn't sorting itself out, right? He's on the franchise tag. And then you got Jamar Chase. To your point, he looked disinterested. And Joe Burrow, I don't know how healthy he is. I know the water bottle scandal came up and he bristled at whatever else. But I don't think there was anything optically that gave you great hope. Ah, they'll figure it out. Just because you have in the past, it's a different world. The AFC is a lot deeper and a lot more competitive than it was. I mean, look, even in within the division, nobody goes away. Nobody's a shrinking violet in the AFC North, and they never have been. So while Cleveland has its issues, and we still don't know overall offensively what Pittsburgh brings other than Boswell playing his old super toe with the field goal game, you know what? A win's a win. And so giving away games here that were woulda, shoulda, couldas, I mean, that was the only game that had a spread higher than 7. So, hey, Mike, give it up is a bad sign.
Mike, what do you do if in fantasy? What do you do if you have Jordan Love?
Well, I mean, they were still trying to talk like he was going to play.
Yeah, right, right. You know, me and you got a better chance to play than Jordan Love does this week.
Yeah. Hey, man, look, the fact that that guy at least at the moment seems to have averted a season ender off of that play means the human body is a weird, wonderful thing. Excuse me. But the thing with him, like back end QB1, if you drafted him, you know, hopefully, yeah, there's no IR for a guy that doesn't go to the IR. So, unfortunately, you have to just put him on the bench. Hopefully, you drafted well enough. Excuse me. Stupid colds going around the studio. I hate the people that come to work sick.
I heard a doctor told me COVID's up already.
Well, there's that. But don't go to work sick, people, across Baltimore land, because you get everybody else sick. I think I'd be looking for another option, right? You got to go to, if you didn't draft a backup, you're going to the waiver wire, you're looking around. I know Baker Mayfield was available on a lot of waiver wires, had himself a fantastic outing. You go a little bit deeper, a guy like Geno Smith, well, he's got that tough New England squad this time, so no picnic for him. And then, you know, if you got to go desperation, you got Derek Carr against Dallas. See what they can do in an encore situation. And Sam Darnold against his old team. I think San Francisco feast. But again, if you left yourself open to having to be desperate, expect bad results.
Mike, we saw the Cowboys completely blow out the Browns in Cleveland on Sunday, 33-17, looked really dominant in that game. The Browns, on the other end, looked really bad in that game on both sides. Did you take from that game more about that saying more about the Cowboys and maybe them being better than we thought, or at least better than I thought? Or is this about the Browns just kind of continuing to stink in the Deshaun Watson era?
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a decision that comes. Obviously, another allegation coming back from 2020 that pops up this week. You could see it in Stefanski's face and his media availability that he's over it. Like, he just wants to concentrate on football. Because, really, we talked about it a lot on our show last night, Jason Smith and I, the podcast out wherever you find your audio. How remarkable the rest of the roster construction, configuration, and cohesion seems to be, even with that hanging over what they were able to do last year. In this case, I mean, they bent, but they didn't break, right? I mean, gave up a bunch of field goals. It was the week of big field goals across the NFL. But so for as badly as they played with a modicum of offense, they still had a shot to fight in that game, but they didn't. right? It's, so now we look at the other side. If Brandon Cooks can be a viable number two for Dak Prescott, offense is going to be interesting. They lost Jake Ferguson for a bit, was expecting him as the, you know, good tight end option, not only for a safety valve, but also the idea that for fantasy purposes, he'd had some value. And we still don't know what the run game is for Dallas. So I don't want to just punt on it altogether. I like the toughness that they showed, and they came out, and everybody seemed, you know, resolved to what the task at hand was. And Micah Parsons, you know, got over his playoff failure and invisibility act. But certainly a huge, great week one with all the expectations that you had for Cleveland. Now for Dak, they've got New Orleans. This is one where they can't stub their toe because, you know, you lose to Derek Carr and Dennis Allen, and suddenly the Boo Birds are right back out in the big home slate.
Hey, Mike, what'd you think of the kickoff?
I hate it.
Yeah, me too. It just looks weird, doesn't it?
Well, it looks weird, and in the end game, where teams got cute, they got burned, and I think everybody learned their lesson. Now, maybe they come up with something like the old coffin corner kick of punts that we don't do anymore, that maybe you find some way that, you know, you can get some spin and maybe surprise someone, you know, the line drive like what happened to Jones in Chicago. But otherwise, it played out, I think, exactly as we talked about a few weeks ago and as the gambling masses put in their algorithms in Vegas. The starting field position was going to be the average, the 28 or 29. I think it was 28.4 was the average starting field position off of the kickoff. So take the touchback and move on. If they make it more punitive, then, yeah, revisit it. But for now, why risk the chaos of what, like Buffalo and Arizona? Why risk that? There's just no point.
Mike, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate your time this afternoon. How can people follow you and keep up with your work?
Always find me in the world at Swollen Dome on Instagram, on Twitter, rebooting the SwollenDome.com site. So we'll have some week two stuff coming up there. And then just rambling, ranting, raving. Just look for it wherever the podcasts are. The I Watch Reflex podcast, getting back in the lab for week two later on tonight.
Appreciate your time, Mike. We'll
Thanks,
talk
Mike.
Again next week.
Thanks, fellas.
You
Have a good
it.
Week. Enjoy the games and go get that win.
Yes, yep. Sir. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll wrap things up. Take one last trip through the fun house before Inside Access takes over at 2. That's next here on The Fan. Before we get to the fun house, do we got a Featured Artist Friday winner?
We do. In light of yesterday's unfortunate news, Featured Artist tomorrow will be Frankie Beverly.
Yes.
Solo work, and of course, with Maze as well.
Of course. So you guys should have some leftovers after the 4 hours tomorrow because Frankie Beverly's got plenty of the hits. So RIP to him, and he's got a great catalog, so his music will definitely live on forever. Let's take a trip through the funhouse before Inside Access takes over.
Quick Draws Funhouse. The Rudeness Tuneness Text Reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
Let's start with the Ravens, where this texter says, the problem I have with Lamar running so much is that it seems to be the only thing he can think to do a lot of the time. Seems like he's poor at multitasking in the pocket, registering who's out there. Instead, it's either one or the other, run or pass. Yes, we know the O-line is subpar, but it seems to be an area where I think he's underdeveloped.
I thought he's farther along than he's ever been watching this game. You know, he had control at the line of scrimmage. I thought he was making a lot of the checks and doing those things. I thought he was in total control. Does he hold the ball too long at times? Yes. But I think what happened as the game went on is I know the rush is coming. I get back. If I see a crease, I'm gone. I think he just said that I'm gonna go win this game. I think that was his mindset, I think.
And I would also say last year, how many times did we see Lamar hold the ball, scramble in the pocket, and look to throw the ball? It happened more last year of him scrambling to throw than him scrambling to run last year, to the point to where people were asking him, when are you going to start running? So, I mean, I don't know. But I thought definitely Thursday night he was extending the play to run. Last year, yep, it was a lot of extending the play to throw. It just, he can do it both ways. I just think he does it based off what he feels like is best at that time.
We have a few on the Orioles as well. This texter says they're really missing what Jorge Mateo brought to the table. Of course, the versatility he brought defensively, but he was also swinging the bat pretty well prior to the concussion and then, of course, the long-term injury.
Yeah, I mean, Mateo is a loss up the middle of the defense, no doubt about it. His speed, his athleticism, his versatility in the infield, they're missing. And like you said, his bat was actually pretty solid for them for a while. It had gotten cold a couple of times too, but he's no different than any of these guys. Mateo's superpower is his speed, and they have been lacking that since he's been gone.
And at the very least, if he wasn't starting, he's a defensive replacement,
right.
And he makes that play last night that Holiday bobbles. How about one more here? Texter says, this season should be a reminder, nothing is guaranteed in professional sports. On paper, the Orioles appeared to be built for a dynasty between major league talent, prospects they could trade for other assets. This year's story, it's not done, but let's say they get dismissed quickly in the playoffs, the narrative around them will change.
This is why I don't buy into the whole analogy of, oh, they're ahead of schedule. What does that even mean? Is there a schedule that's been put out that I missed? Because I've never gotten a schedule sent to me of when the Orioles are supposed to win the World Series. You get your window, and you got to maximize that window. It's no such thing as ahead of schedule because you don't know what next year brings. They were super healthy last year. That is obviously not the case this year. That'll do it for us. Another great one in the books. Appreciate all the guests that came on today. Nolan, great job as always, and you, the listeners, for sure. Don't touch that dial. Inside Access, they're up next. Until next time, class dismissed.